participate. We're going to start today's session with a conversation with Rehan Yar Khan, general partner of Oraya's Venture Partners. And Rehan has been a very active early investor in the Indian startup ecosystem. Rehan, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much.
So Rehan, let's start by telling our audience a bit about your fund and your investments in recent years by way of introduction.
Sure, sure. First, I wanted to also congratulate you on all the amazing work that you've been doing. 300 plus roundtables is quite a feat, and I can imagine putting them all together must have been quite a task, right? Each one is a nice event. So great work there, all of you. Well, coming to us, we are an India-centric venture capital fund. I've been an investor for the last 10 years, and I set up the fund around 3 years ago, along with two other colleagues of mine. So we have three partners in the fund. And we, for the last 10 years, have been investors largely in India's consumer story, primarily in online consumer businesses. We do a few offline consumer businesses as well, because India is a pretty exciting market for not just innovations but white space filling of brands, which is a phenomenon you may not find in the US and in other places, because India being an underdeveloped country has fewer brand teams than developed markets do. So we invest primarily in consumer. We do software product investments once in a while, but increasingly we have doubled down on consumer, and we find that we are best suited to add value to consumer businesses post investment, because we are very good guys with branding, marketing, positioning, ATL, BTL, which is advertising and promotions, and those kind of things. Some of our companies, I'll start with some of our oldest companies. There's a company which is actually a software product company called Dhruva, which was our first investment, is a company in the software backup space, relocated to Silicon Valley and has done fairly well over there. I think it's a $500 million company now. 3 years in a row, they can go number one by Gartner and what it does. Marquee customers like NASA and University of California, Pfizer, etc. Another very well-known company here in India for us is a company called Ola Cabs. We were the first investors in that. Company's done very well. Does 1 million rides a day, goes very fast, has 75% of the market here. The clear leader over Uber in India. We had another company called Chixi, which was bought by ViewClip, which was a Silicon Valley-based company, and was further bought by PCCW Hong Kong, which the company has gone on to become the largest streaming mobile channel in China. It delivers streaming video on 2G and 2.5G networks. So it's done extremely well in that regard. We've had other consumer companies here in India. We've invested in a lingerie brand, which is like affordable, fashionable daytime lingerie. We saw that in the market. So that's done very well. It's coming from Pretty Secrets. It's a leader in the space. We have a company which is a booking engine. I don't know what the U.S. equivalent is, but maybe like a Ticketmaster or a Ticketmaster for hair salons. So if you think about it, everybody needs to go to the salon every month, right? Half the population goes many times a month. The other half goes at least once a month, right? Huge industry here in India, $15 billion. Of spend at salons by consumers in 2014, climbing steadily. The time and motion opportunity of making calls and booking those appointments is pretty high. So easier to just book on phone. using your smartphone, you know, find your favorite salon, find your favorite stylist, you know, check her kind of slot and book, right? And because you're booking an appointment, you're part of the take rate. So, you know, great mm-hmm. company in the making. We have, you know, we have other marquee companies like PharmEasy, which deliver medicines home. You know, we've got a company which is the Ola for Bosses, which is again an Indian company, so it's a poor man's Ola. Ola and Uber, of course, are very elite services. You may have a smartphone, but you also need a lot of money to be riding them. So as smartphone prices fall in India and you're getting low-cost smartphones and low-cost data, you know, the lower sections of society are coming online, so they too want better quality transport and those kind of things. So we've invested in a company that does that. We have a very innovative company here, which is building a low-cost hotel chain by aggregating one-star and two-star hotels. It's called Oyo Rooms. So it's a novel idea. We haven't seen this idea in other parts of the world. It basically organizes, you know, a very unorganized sector, which are mom-and-pop hotels and motels at one-star, two-star levels, and gives them a brand and standard operating procedures. So you know, these are the typical kind of companies we invest in, very innovative, very asset-light, you know, are not necessarily only online, but have, you know, a massive offline presence and offline distribution. But the key is that they're asset light, they're almost always consumer, and you know, they have a lot of headroom to grow, right? So that's our model for investing.
Can you, based on what you're doing in terms of stuff that you have invested mm-hmm. in already and what you see, you know, yes. I'm sure, you know, in selecting, let's say, five investments, you probably see 50 other consumer mm-hmm. investments. What are some of the salient trends that you see in consumer concepts or consumer businesses that are coming on and that are actually scaling in the Indian market?
There's just a lot which is scaling in India. India is an underdeveloped country. You know, there's white space in almost everything in the United States. You guys, you know, need to produce crazy products like, you know, take somebody's picture and it disappears in 60 seconds to create a, you know, billion-dollar company. In India, we have to do food, we have to do hotels, we have to do buses. It's a lot simpler over here because we're an underdeveloped country, right? So there's opportunity in many, many, many verticals here in India. You know, I mean, I wouldn't do justice if I just named some, you know, everything from banking. India is extremely underbanked. There are only 35 million people in India which have, you know, the equivalent of a FICO score, you know, which is what we call a CIBIL score here in India. There are only 5 million active credit cards in India. You know, hardly anyone is taking a loan from our 1.3 billion population. Very few people have bank accounts. So, you know, banking, right, extremely underbanked. If I come to another vertical like media consumption, though, you know, everybody hears about India's massive Bollywood industry. Only 2% of people in India have access to Bollywood, right? The rest of the people don't even watch movies in India. They have no access, right? And they say Bollywood produces, the Indian movie industry produces more movies a year than Hollywood, right? And yet only 2% of the population watches movies in India. So media is another tremendous area. If you look at apparel, I mean, you can name any sector, right? You know, kids,
so
apparel,
transportation. In the context of this, you know, grand underdeveloped opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, portfolio mm-hmm. that India presents, mm-hmm. help us understand how you view that from a venture investment standpoint, because, you know, underdeveloped also presents kind of slow growth markets. So venture is typically demands extraordinarily high growth. How do you reconcile these two phenomena?
It has to be asset light, right? So I think the key in venture is not tech, right? I think tech is, just having a lamp stack doesn't make you tech. I think the key that venture capital requires is it needs to be asset light. And that's what actually gives you scale. If I'm going to open shops and those kind of things, that slows me down. But if I'm going to leverage a chain of shops which is already out there and I'm going to distribute my product via that, then that doesn't slow me down, right? Or if I'm going to leverage smartphone distribution, you know, that I get my app on a lot of smartphones and people use that, that doesn't slow me down. So the characteristics that you guys in the U.S. have believed are, you have to differentiate the U.S. from India. There are limited opportunities for venture quality investments in the offline world simply because it's highly developed, right? It's not because you could launch a product that won't have the characteristics of venture growth. It's just that opportunities are limited in there, right? So in the U.S. and possibly in Europe, most of the venture investing has concentrated on distribution via smartphones, right? And those kind of things, or the internet, you know, via the smartphones, because computers. In India, that is not the case. In India, because it's so underdeveloped, you can produce brands, right, which are even offline distribution or online distribution for that matter, and they both have similar characteristics of nonlinear or extremely rapid growth that can give you venture class returns.
So how do you analyze Flipkart in that context? Because Flipkart has gone on to build this whole distribution and logistics infrastructure, which is not asset light at all.
Yeah, because Flipkart is not as asset heavy as building a chain of stores, right? So it's not maybe as super asset light as let's say Snapdeal, which is a pure marketplace in India. It does have some it has back end warehouses, etc. But the entire front end is absent. So if I was going to make a chart, I would still place it in the quad of asset light. Maybe a little bit more towards the middle, but more in that, but in that quad.
So you think you're the assets light versus asset heavy in your definition is whether you need physical infrastructure or not, if I'm hearing you correctly, in terms of building stores or having storefronts. That's your notion of asset heavy.
I think front end. I think you said that right. I think front end and production, right? So if you have to manufacture products, so I think there are two things which would come into asset heavy. One would be storefronts, and the second would be manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Right? If you are not doing those two things, I think you're asset light.
Mm-hmm. So that's
right. So if you look
at
if you look at Meru cabs in India and Ola mm-hmm. cabs in Uber, the difference with Meru was that all the three companies saw the same opportunity. And what is that opportunity in India? That there are 20 to 30 million Indians that need to take a cab ride a day. That's a 90 million to 100 million cab rides a day market. And because of the extreme paucity of public infrastructure and just as growing society, there's a massive market out there. Meru's approach in India was, hey, I'll go and buy 1,000 cabs. Mm-hmm. Ola Uber's approach has been, there are already a million tourist vehicles in India or licensed cabs in India. Why don't you just aggregate those?
Yeah.
So same market, but asset light is the difference. I wouldn't say it's the tech which is the difference, right? Just distributing and calling the cab via smartphone. I can call a Meru via smartphone, right? Meru is also mm-hmm. running good analytics in the back end to deliver their cabs at different places. But the difference is the asset light model, and that's what mm-hmm. actually that's what makes it venture class, because it takes that little bit of money that you put in and to produce a much larger result. So I can use my money to fund negative EBIT versus having to use that money to fund asset.
Yeah. So what you are saying is that in India there is a lot of assets that are already in deployment, but in unorganized sectors, whether it's hotels or cabs or stores or all kinds of things, and you believe, at least it seems like one of your investment theses is to bring those together under 1A brands, put marketing around it, put the technology-enabled mm-hmm. infrastructure around it, and mm-hmm. put the operational infrastructure around it to streamline it, and then you have interesting consumer businesses that are that can scale okay. nicely.
That's right. Very a kind good. Of reverse trend argument.
Yeah, okay. So now please analyze the Indian version of the unicorn mania we are seeing actually all over the world right now. How do you read that? How is that playing out in, from your point of view in India?
Well, I'll tell you what happened in India. Sorry, I seem to have lost my PC connection. What happened in India was post Alibaba's IPO, I don't know if this is what happened in the US, but post Alibaba's IPO in September 2014, there was a tremendous frenzy of capital that rushed into India, you know, maybe looking for the next Alibaba, possibly, right? So mm-hmm. so the quarters, the last quarter of 2014 and the first two quarters of 2015 were extremely heavy in terms of capital flowing into India from non-regular, non-resident funds in India, right? So it's so not the resident VC industry, but hedge funds from the US or you know, other such places, what we call suitcase VCs would fly in and park themselves at an airport hotel and come and make a few deals and write big checks and kind of go off, right? Mm-hmm. That created few premature unicorns. So I don't know if they are not real unicorns, but some of them definitely got there prematurely. Maybe they should have got there another 3-4 quarters later or 6 quarters later, but they got there, you know, they all got there in 2015, right? That has definitely died out. I think some of those guys which got there prematurely now are dealing with a, you know, problem of, hey, how do I raise money again at this valuation? But that's fine. Right, I think in India, considering how young we were as a venture industry, and maybe also for you know you guys in the US, I think you need these bursts. I think you need this momentum from time to time to get things going. I think you need this euphoria, right? It pulls in more.
Yeah, it has created tremendous publicity for entrepreneurship in India,
absolutely.
which was a good thing.
Absolutely. You know the Prime Minister was on stage and, you know, they announced this $1.5 billion local fund, you know, fund of funds. They, you know, a lot of angel investors jumped into the fray. You know, some of the resident VC funds ran around all over the world and raised a lot of money from LPs. So I think it was a good thing. A lot of entrepreneurs got into it. Corporates started looking at the sector seriously. So I think it was a good thing that happened.
Now, what, you know, after all the dust settling around this mm-hmm. unicorn mania and, you know, rationality returning to the market, when you look at consumer tech, consumer technology-enabled services, let's kind of categorize it this way, what mm-hmm. are some of the best companies in India that have rational valuations, can, you know, sustain over the long time and deliver really strong companies with proper, you know, exits and everything?
So I think BookMyShow, possibly, right? Because he's a leader in this. BookMyShow is a leader in the space. You know, they have money from three revenue streams. You know, they monetize the take or the booking fee of you know, movie tickets. They charge you know, the movie halls for software, and they charge a convenience fee, you know, to consumers. And mm-hmm. they seem to be a clear leader in the space. Fantastic entrepreneur, super asset-light business. It's all in the cloud, right? You don't have to go food or run cabs or anything like that. You just have to kind of create this company in the cloud. So I think great business, extremely monetizable, very profitable. So clearly a great business. I think Zomato, now that Zomato is kind of redoing themselves, right?
I don't believe in Zomato at all. From a valuation point of view, business model point of view, I think this company has gotten far ahead of itself.
Fair enough, we'll agree to disagree on that. I'm not going to convince you that, hey, you know, my thesis is correct. but that's what I believe, because food is a large subject matter, and I believe Zomato has brand space, right? It's got mind share. It's my go-to place for food. Now it's a question of how effectively they turn on various monetization levers. I think as far as food goes, they're clearly the number one brand in this space. There's just no two ways.
Yeah, but the business model is the problem, right? If you look at the equivalent business models like Yelp, these are not good business models.
So I don't think Yelp is a leading brand in the, I don't know much about Yelp, but I don't know if it's a leading
Yelp
brand.
Yelp is absolutely the leading brand in America as far as restaurants is concerned.
But I think for reviews, right?
Yes.
User reviews.
Yeah.
Not for like ordering food, and not the be all and end all of food, right? It's not like the number one authority on food.
So how do you explain the Zomato business model, which you think is going to scale?
Yeah. First of all, if you go with my assumption that Zomato is this be all end all brand in food, right? Which is what we believe at the firm, that it definitely occupies, you know, premium mindshare when it comes to food. Then, you know, from that, you can develop several monetization levers. Some of them they've switched on. You know, the older ones were like Yelp, where you monetize listing. Newer ones are like, you know, food order, where they take a commission on every order. I think very soon they will come up with some very interesting models where they will actually start monetizing your bill at the restaurant. Now that, of course, is the big one, right? So I book at the restaurant.
Yeah.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
So monetizing your bill at the restaurant, I think, is the big one, and I think there are several innovations that we will see from, you know, Zomato, which will allow them to monetize the bill of the restaurant stores.
What they do in the future remains to be seen, but currently the business that they've built, I think their valuation is way off kilter as far as current business, current monetization levels are concerned.
Absolutely. We don't disagree on that. That was
the
2015 halo effect, right? We don't disagree on that. Valuation is probably ahead of where it should be. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe by 30%, 40%, 50%. It could be any number. But we think it's a clear leader in the space, and given time, it can become a very valuable company.
How do you read Flipkart?
In a tough space, because for all faults of their own, right? We don't think Flipkart is a great brand. Flipkart sells on price. They stand for price. Anything that stands for price and price alone is a commodity. It's not a brand, right? And they failed to become a brand. Amazon is a brand. Amazon is Earth's largest store. It stands for range. I think somebody tweeted today morning, the information tweeted today morning. Jessica tweeted today morning, hey, I'm surprised prices on Amazon are higher than Walmart. Really? Are you surprised? They never stood for price. They never said we stand for price. They always said we stand for range. And they've got you hooked on to that. You go there, you get anything you want, so, you know, you don't check other stores, right? You're just hooked
Actually,
on.
Amazon
hooked on
did position on price. For a long time, Amazon did position on price, and still they position on price, but not only price. The customer service that Amazon is delivering is unbelievable. You know, you order a $2 merchandise on Amazon, and they deliver it for free as part of Amazon Prime. And that is a level of service that is, I don't even know how it works, how they make that profitable, how they do that profitably, but it's unbelievable level of service.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they never had the tagline, Earth's cheapest store. They always had Earth's largest store. So
no, but they
like
did.
They routinely
offered the best prices. Also, when Amazon came into the market, they didn't have Prime. For instance, Prime was a much later invention. When they came into the market in the beginning, they were positioning on price. And they weren't positioning on range either. At that time, it was books and, you know, CDs and stuff like that. So it was a price. They entered the market through price and then, you know, moved up the value chain. So maybe that's what Flipkart was trying to do. But
this is what Flipkart hasn't done. They haven't been able to move away from price. That's the issue there.
Well, and Flipkart is also going to have to compete with Amazon, which is really good at doing what they really good.
Yeah, I'm less concerned about the back end. I'm less concerned about the back end. I think I'm more concerned about their brand positioning and the experience they deliver. I mean, I went to buy a pair of shoes the other day. I buy ASICS shoes, so my shoes, you know, in the monsoon in India, they took a beating. So I went to Flipkart. They were for 7,500 rupees, right? And for next day delivery, they either wanted me to join Prime, which is new in India, or I had to pay 100 rupees extra, or it was free delivery 2 to 4 days. I go to Flipkart, the same shoes are 6,500 rupees, and next day is free delivery, right? Now, this clearly shows Flipkart are not consumer guys, because if they were consumer guys, they would have charged me for next day delivery and sold me something to make it free, right? That's the difference between a consumer, a company that really understands consumer psychology and a company which is great at the back end and very functional.
Well, your point is well taken, but I think what Amazon is doing, at least in the U.S., and I imagine that they will do it around the world, the level of service that they're providing plays very well to consumer psychology. I mean, these days,
sure.
I first look for, so if I have had to buy something online, I first look at Amazon because just the level of delivery time and service, and it's all covered by my Amazon Prime, they have got me. Consumer psychology-wise, they've got me, and they've got most consumers here.
Absolutely.
So, and that, however, to deliver that kind of level of service and that to have that lock on consumer psychology, you've got to get your back end right. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to deliver that. And that's not a simple back end. That's an extraordinarily complex back end.
So my point was that actually Flipkart is pretty similar in India, at least in standards of delivery, you know, to Amazon, but they don't sell that well.
They don't sell that well.
Yeah, they don't sell. Mm-hmm. They don't sell that. They don't sell that well. They go on talking about price.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Right. And that's where you kind of move away from, you know, not being a brand.
Any other comments before we move to the mentoring segment of the show today? Any other parting thoughts?
On Indian unicorns or something else?
Indian startups in general, where you're looking for opportunities. For instance, are there, you know, segments or opportunities that you've seen that where you would like to see companies?
So we think, I'll talk about an unusual segment. Non-tech is a great opportunity in India, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs miss that, you know, because you know, there's just so much influence coming from global media and you know, global role models, which are all these tech startups, and they become really big, that I think a lot of entrepreneurs in India are missing out on the non-tech opportunity in India, like FMCG, skincare, you know, those kind of products. And I think there are billion-dollar companies in India to be built in that. So entrepreneurs, if you're listening, please do look at non-tech stuff as well in the Indian context.
All right. Well, thanks, Rehan. That was a very interesting discussion and a great window into your process on how the consumer economy in India, startup economy in India is shaping up. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.